This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsNap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It's hour number two, and we've got something going for you in this hour, shaking it up a little bit. Monte Hill, 95.7, the game in San Francisco, is going to join us in just a couple of minutes. We'll talk about Golden State, get a preview of the NBA Finals from their perspective. Again, a team that's been here many times before, sixth time in the last eight seasons. This is, again, a team that's so explosive, but what are some other underlining issues with Golden State as they walk into game one tonight against the Celtics? We'll get a preview of them coming up. We'll also get Brian Barrett in hour number three to talk about the Boston Celtics to give you a complete picture. Good, the Bad, and the Dumb is coming up at 40 past the hour, so you don't want to miss that. And I said in the hour one, and I'll keep reiterating it, I hope this is a long series. I can't guarantee things anymore, because when I think a series should be one-sided, it goes seven games. When I think it should go seven games, it tends to be one-sided. So it's been sort of the MO of this postseason. But I do think that when you get to the finals here with a team like Boston that didn't fluke their way into this thing. I mean, they swept the Brooklyn Nets. They beat Giannis in Milwaukee. They took down Miami in seven games in one of the weirder series you'll ever see. This is a two seed out of the East. They didn't fluke their way into this. They turned around their season from January, where they were middle of the road and in some cases awful, but then turned it around and became the best team in the NBA for stretches of time in the latter part of the regular season. And Golden State, we know how good they are. They're the favorites for a reason, because they're that explosive and they do play defense. We talk about this being, you know, offense versus Boston defense, but don't forget, Golden State can play some defense too. But I do hope that the Boston Celtics can give this a proper series, so it isn't just yet another coronation. We always trusted LeBron to be able to do that in series with the Golden State Warriors. We're now passing that on to the Celtics. But what Golden State has done in this era of the NBA, especially in the Western Conference, that has gotten tougher at times with teams coming up and down, is simply remarkable. It's simply remarkable. And they're doing it with this trio of guys with different players around them, but they're still finding themselves four wins from yet another title, which would be their fourth over this eight-year span. Monte Hill joins us next to talk about the Golden State Warriors and their journey to this moment. 95.7, the game in San Francisco next.
Kane is in the building.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I feel like we should do top five, bottom five coming up with this intro. But it's actually from 2010 on a Throwback Thursday. On this date, Armando Galarraga in 2010 had a near-perfect game, ruined by Jim Joyce. Game one of the NBA Finals tonight. Golden State hosting Boston in game number one. For Golden State, a familiar sight. Six times in the last 8 years, they've been in the finals. Bonte Hill joins us, 95.7, the game in San Francisco on a Progressive guest line. How are you, Bonte? Thanks for joining us, as always.
Oh, man, I'm so fired up. The finals are finally here. Game one finally here tonight. I can't wait.
All right, let's talk about this Golden State team, because here we are again, six times in the last 8 years. They don't have Kevin Durant on this team, but how similar is this team to what we saw in like 2015 when they first emerged on the scene?
Good question. It's not that similar to 2015, because 2015, you had a lot of veterans on that team. 2015, you had Sean Livingston, Leandro Barbosa, Maurice Spates. This team right here was a developmental team. They tried to contend for a championship while also developing young talent. Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody, the ascension of Jordan Poole, James Wiseman waiting in the wings as he was hurt all season long. So, yeah, it's similar to 2015 because they don't have Kevin Durant. That's the only similarity here. And, of course, the core with Curry, Clay, Draymond Green, Steve Kerr. But Looney wasn't around. Iguodala hasn't contributed much to this team this season. So it's really a different team. It's not even a 2015-like run because they won 67 games in 2015. I mean, they blew away the league. They were the top seed in the league. They win 67 games. Of course, they win the NBA Finals. We had no idea. There were people thinking this team would lose in the first round because of all the injuries.
Yeah.
Remember, Steph last 12 regular season games. The last 12. So, really, this team started gelling in the postseason. They used the postseason to gel. So, I think it's pretty different. This team is pretty different than what they had in 2015.
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't feel like a surprise, but during the regular season, what was the state of the team and what was the outlook of the team? Because they couldn't get all three guys on the court at the same time.
Yeah, well, you know, they got off to the monster start, 18-2, right? So they get off to the hot start, and really the expectations got raised there. So I remember doing shows in August, and I'm saying, you know, if Clay is Clay, Wiggins is playing well, this team maybe could be a top four team in the Western Conference to contend for a Western Conference championship. But the outlook was so murky during the season because when Clay got back, Draymond gets hurt, Steph Curry starts slumping, then Jordan Poole goes back to the bench, he lost his rhythm. Andrew Wiggins had a horrendous February, one that we all like to forget. And so it was a roller coaster ride with this team all throughout the regular season. Yet they won 53 games, and the whole talking point when they entered the playoffs, if they're healthy, they're going to be tough to beat four times in seven games. They're going to be tough to beat, but they have to be healthy, and they've gotten healthy at the right time.
Boston is very successful as you can get against a Steve Kerr team. They're 9-7. Yet they only play twice a year, both different types of schedules, big road trips. It's not a consistency thing. They're not in the same division, so they don't play a lot. Is there something about that record, though, that we can take out of it for this series?
You know, I really don't think we can. You know, a lot of people cited Memphis beating the Warriors 3 or 4 games this season. Didn't matter. The Nuggets beat the Warriors 3 or 4 times in the regular season. Didn't seem to matter when the Warriors outscored them at 5. Dallas Mavericks beat the Warriors 3 out of 4 and had a lot of success over the last 3 to 4 seasons against Steve Kerr to go to State Warriors. Didn't seem to matter in the Western Conference Finals. And so when you look at the 9-7 record, take into account the Warriors won 15 games a couple years ago, right? They had nobody on the floor. Last year, it was Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Andrew Wiggins, but you had a lot of role players on that team thrust into starting roles. I don't think you can put too much stock into the record. Now, I will say, Boston has brought it when they've come to the Bay Area and vice versa with the Golden State Warriors going out to Boston. They've put on some thrilling, thrilling matchups on Saturday nights, Friday nights. So, look, the record is the record. I wouldn't put too much stock into it. It's just about the matchup. These two teams match up really well against each other, so including these two regular season games this year. The Warriors beat Boston in Boston. They had no Clay. They had no Poole. Boston was a completely different team at the time. I think there were 3 games under 500 or 14-15, 14-17, something like that. And they didn't have they didn't have a Derrick White. You know, Robert Williams wasn't roaming the paint like he usually was. So, you know, you got to throw the regular season records out the window.
All right, let's get to this team. And I want to ask you about Andrew Wiggins. Here's a former number one overall pick. Found his role with this Golden State team after arriving. How did this come together? Like, how did he adapt to what he is today, what his expectations were when he was with Minnesota?
It's culture. It's all about culture, right? I know it's a buzzword that everybody uses in sports, and it's a little overrated, a little overused, I should say. Look, he comes into a place to where he doesn't have to carry the franchise. In Minnesota, it was all on his shoulders, right? Number one overall pick. You got to help us get back to the playoffs. He's going to see double teams, triple teams. He was our number one scoring option. And scoring wasn't a problem for him. It was just that it came in volumes, right? 29 shots to score, 29 points. At times, he looked disinterested because it was a losing culture, a losing franchise. He comes here to Golden State to the Bay Area. Obviously, Steph Curry is the face of the franchise. Then you have Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. So the pressure to produce. Look, all they ask Andrew Wiggins is play defense at a high, high level. He's going to get opportunities to score here and there offensively. And he's still putting in 17, 18 points per game. And he's bought all the way in. Why? Because winning. Winning makes everybody smile. I've seen Andrew Wiggins smile more in the last week than I've seen him smile in 7 years in Minnesota. So it's culture, and it's the pressure of not having to do too much. The Warriors have made it really easy for him. Hey, you're going to be in the corner. You're going to get wide open three-point opportunities because of the gravity of Stephen Curry and somewhat the gravity of Klay Thompson when he's coming off the screens. And then when Jordan Poole comes into the game, he can be the primary playmaker, and Andrew Wiggins can still play second fiddle to Jordan Poole. So the pressure's not on him to score 30 a night like it was in Minnesota. And when you win, everybody's smiling. You hear Jordan Poole, they ask him, you know, what is the number one thing you've learned this postseason, or what is the number one thing you've learned this year? He goes, it's all about winning. Yeah. Not about coming off the bench, not about starting, not about scoring 40. It's about winning. And Andrew Wiggins has bought all the way into that.
Bondale joins us 95.7 The Game in San Francisco on Golden State as we get ready for game one of the NBA Finals tonight. So we talk about the Celtics defense. We talk about Golden State's offense. What about the defense for Golden State? How good is it? How important is it going to be in this series?
Yeah, the Golden State Warriors do a really good job of taking away your ancillary pieces. So, look, Luka Doncic got his numbers, but it came at a high value. You know, he was taking 26 shots to score 30. The Warriors will take that all day long. Jokic, you knew he would dominate with the Denver Nuggets, but they shut everybody else down. Memphis, Ja Morant's going to get his, but can you shut down the Desmond Baynes, the Dylan Brooks, the Jaren Jackson Jr.? So, look, Wiggins is going to draw the assignment on Jason Tatum. You don't stop a Jason Tatum. You just don't. He's a star. Matter of fact, he's a superstar. And he's going to take the torch and be in the face of the league one day. He's really that special. Jaylen Brown, as a number two option, is a dynamic player. So what do? You make it hard for them. You show them double teams. You play some zone. You show some single coverage. You try to mix it up defensively against those two guys. And then you take something away. All right, if Jason Tatum's going to score 30, I need to take away his playmaking ability. And that's what the Warriors do so well. They take away something from these superstars, just like Luka. Okay, Luka, you're going to shoot the ball. You're going to score. We're going to take away your passing, your assists. Same thing they did with Jokic in the first round. Jokic, the assist numbers were not high because they made him just a primary scorer. And they lived with him being a scorer and not a playmaker. So it's all about just taking something away from these superstars and throwing them different looks. And the Warriors do that so well. They'll drop into a zone. They'll play man. They'll double. They really play well defensively, and they communicate really well. Of course, that all starts with Draymond Green and also at the point of attack with Andrew Wiggins. So they're also going to get a big boost this series with Gary Payton II. Gary Payton II coming in this series. He's a guy who can maybe defend Jaylen Brown and really force Jaylen Brown to try to put the ball on the floor to where Gary Payton II is really good at swiping away basketballs and coming up with steals. So the Warriors are no slouch on defense. They also box out really well. You know, a lot of people say, man, they're a small team. But, man, the Warriors out-rebounded the Memphis Grizzlies in 5 of the 6 games. They out-rebounded the Dallas Mavericks in every game in the series, except for game number 4. So they're really good defensively, and they talk and communicate a lot.
We've been talking about Steph Curry, and we've been doing the larger picture thing with him in terms of where this kind of the stratospheric level he is right now and how he's changed the game. And that's from the outside looking in. You're in the nucleus of the Steph Curry world in San Francisco. What is your perspective on what he's meant not only to the league, the Golden State Warriors, and the basketball in that area where you live?
Well, the Golden State Warriors were an afterthought franchise. They were decrepit before Steph Curry came. Let's put the rat on the table. They were a moribund franchise, all right? They had made the playoffs one time from 94 to 2013. One time they made the playoffs. Think about that. In the NBA, where 16 teams make the playoffs a season, 8 in each conference, they made it once in 2007 with the We Believe team. Steph Curry flipped the entire franchise. I mean, this franchise, the value. Think about it. They got sold for $425 million to the Lakers and Peter Guber's of the world. Now they're worth over $5 billion. Why? Because of Stephen Curry. What he's done to lift this franchise, to become an afterthought, to never have a primetime game, to now all of a sudden get all the national TV love, and what he's done to change the game of basketball, where all these people who think they can shoot threes can't really shoot threes, he's done that. So in this region, Steph Curry can do no wrong. Going to 6 NBA Finals? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, he can. Nobody cares really about the Finals MVP. Would we like to see him win it just to shut everybody up? Sure. We know he was the best player in 2015 in the Finals. So what, Andre Iguodala got the award? Whatever. Nobody cares because he's hanging banners. 2 MVPs. What he does in the community. He can do no wrong right now. His legacy is cemented here in the Bay Area. And what he needs here is, like, He's now being compared to the great Joe Montana as the greatest pro athlete in Bay Area sports history. He's on Mount Rushmore with Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, Barry Bonds. That's how we feel about Stephen Curry. He's our guy. He's been here forever. He's never leaving. And what he's done to lift this region and Warrior fans up. I didn't even know this many Warrior fans existed back in 2010. I'm no joke. Like, this guy's done everything for this franchise and much, much more. Win, lose, or draw in these finals, Steph Curry's legacy. Now, nationally, they'll be talking about something different. Locally, we know who Steph Curry is, and he's one of a kind, and we appreciate what he's done for this organization and this region.
Bonte, always good talking to you, my friend. Can't wait to talk to you about the Niners and when we get to that time of the year, my friend. Thank you so much.
Oh, Trey Lance season's coming, folks.
That's right.
A lot of people saying Trey Lance ain't ready. Got something else coming. Trust me. Trey Lance is going to blow everybody away. Good to talk to you again.
You got it. We'll talk to you soon. Bonte Hill, 95.7 The Game out in San Francisco on the Golden State Warriors. Love it. Love that guy. So fun. Yeah, I can't wait for our previews when we talk Niners, Trey Lance. But right about Steph Curry. I mean, nationally is a different picture. He's right, right? Nationally is a different picture. Locally, of course, you know, you take the team that beat Dallas. Remember they were the 8 seed that beat Dallas? I think it was like 2006, I think. I'm trying to remember. Maybe no, 2007. I think it was the year after the Mavericks had won the championship, like 2007. That's it. And then Curry comes in, and he's right. It's billion, now worth billions because of him. All right, we will have Brian Barrett on in Hour 3. We'll get the flip side of the finals tonight when we talk Boston Celtics. It's coming up in Hour 3. Good, the bad, and the dumb, 15 minutes away as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony G and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks to Bonte Hill out in San Francisco to talk to us about the Golden State Warriors. Again, Brian Barrett in Hour 3. Good, the Bad, and the Dumb coming up soon. Mark on Facebook has sent me a screenshot of Major League Baseball. I think you and I did this story on Armando Galarraga. Tell me if I'm wrong. Did we not talk about the Monmouth University students who were appealing this on behalf of Armando Galarraga?
I think so.
Major League Baseball? I think this was Good, the Bad, and the Dumb not that long ago. So, yeah, he sent me a couple of screenshots of some articles that says Armando Galarraga hopes MLB credits him with a perfect game. So he probably, you know, so he does, he does want it.
Yeah, well, out. I mean, because, you know, Major League Baseball cares a lot about their numbers, their statistics.
They very much so.
It's an anomaly with this one because it has no major impact on anything.
Yeah, and again, it wasn't like, I mean, look, Joyce's argument could be, you know, like you could say to him, hey, man, why didn't you just call the guy out? You know, if it's when in doubt, call him out and get the guy the perfect game. But Joyce could come back and say, it was a 3-0 game. It's not like the Tigers were up 9-0 or 8-0. It's a 3-0 game. That's legit. Like, there's a legit comeback here. But of course, Joyce would say, look, I don't think about the score. I don't think about I call him without any reference to what it is. Which, by the way, is very difficult to do.
Yeah.
Like, I hate to say this, but if I was in his shoes, I would know exactly that a perfect game was on the
exactly.
line. Like, how could you not? Right? You're standing out there. You're bored half the time. You look up at the scoreboard. There's a zero next to the hits. And you start to realize, hey, I'm the first base umpire and nobody has gotten here.
Nobody's been standing here at all today.
Not one person has stood here for any reason at all. Error, walk, whatever. I must know something's going on.
But you know what? I mean, maybe for him at that same moment, you know, all those type of games, like he's probably called first base, you know, how many times in his career? And maybe they all just kind of meld together.
Sure.
You know, it's like, you know, because everyone's running to first base unless you struck out.
Yeah. Do you think it's possible he didn't know what a perfect game was? I don't think it's possible.
I think, you know, when something like that is going on and the crowd is getting into it, and if you ever look over into the dugout, and because I guarantee I don't remember the game, going on, But I could almost guarantee that Armando Galarraga was sitting alone in the dugout.
It's yeah, no right, one was no doubt. Next to him. No doubt. It sounds like something like if you're an athlete or umpires or a coach, like it sounds like something you need to say. Like I don't care about those things. I only care about the, you know.
Yeah.
And you go, it's umpire speak. Stop it. It's like that story I told you about Broncos wide receiver Rod Smith, who set the record for most touchdown receptions and by a wide receiver in Broncos history. And afterwards he was like, he was blowing it off like, I don't care. That's you guys. You guys care about those things. I just want to win. That's all I care about is winning. And then later in the interview, he started talking about how his whole family was in town.
Yeah.
And then somebody went, why was your family in town? Like, and then he kind of had to backtrack. Like, he of course knew what the moment was.
Yeah.
He knew. He just felt like it's embarrassing if I admit that I did know it was be important and I had my family fly in for it.
No, I mean,
right? Like, imagine, sounds like something I shouldn't say.
Imagine like a Cal Ripken Jr. You know, when he broke the playing in game streak,
yeah,
the Ironman streak. And he, you know, they asked him the day before, hey, are you excited for tomorrow? Are you going to break the streak? Oh, you know, I don't even think about it.
Yeah. Well, is that tomorrow?
Is that tomorrow? God, I had no clue.
Wow. Jeez. Time just gets away from me. Wow. That's tomorrow. Well,
I guess
huh?
it I is
guess,
tomorrow.
I guess I better have maybe wear a special hat.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. You guys tell me it's more important to you guys than it is to me.
Maybe I should tell my wife to bring the kids to the game. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, the only time I think you can get away with that is if it's a single game record. You just happen to be racking up some yards or you're racking up hits or whatever it might be. And it happened within that game. But still, you're going to know going on. Like you, the person, you may not invite the family, but you know for a fact what's going on.
So, yeah. So I kind of think Jim Joyce knew that was, you know.
He had to.
Like just the buzz in the ballpark and just the feeling.
No,
like,
because you know what the fallacy is that, you know, remember the movie, For Love of the Game.
Right. With
where Kevin Costner is standing on the mound and then all of a sudden, like, you know, it's the top of the ninth or whatever ninth inning it is or the eighth inning. And he talks to his catcher. He goes, "Did anybody reach first base?"
Right. Yeah, right.
You know, where he just had that realization like, God, no one's touched first base. And it's like, no, every pitcher would know at that moment.
Don't you think?
That's Hollywood.
Don't you think if you are Miguel Cabrera, the first baseman, you're telling Jim, like you're talking to Jim Joyce in between pitches. And
of course,
like,
you're bored. He's usually talking to the bat, to the runner.
Yeah, he's usually talking to runners. Like, no one stood on this bag, so I guess I got to talk to you, Jim.
I haven't held anyone at first base. Jim Joyce, you haven't switched positions the entire game.
Like, you know, an umpire doesn't stand there. A perfect game. You could go like, Jim, have you noticed anybody on first base this entire game? Because I can't put my finger on it, but I don't think anybody's been on first base. Were we in seventh inning? I don't think anybody's been on first base. I could be wrong. You know, my memory's sliding a little bit. I could be wrong.
Yeah, and I know it happens all the time. I mean, you know, these guys have played thousands of baseball games, and you know, they've umpired thousands of baseball games. You might not realize it, but then once you do, you're not forgetting it.
No, exactly.
It'll hit you in mind, and then every single play, you're thinking about it, like, yeah, he didn't reach first. He didn't reach first again.
That is so wild. So,
yeah, Miguel Cabrera, you didn't hold one person on at first.
So wild, like. Like, think about how difficult it is to pitch a perfect game, right? And you get, like, once in a lifetime moment, and it's taken away, and you're like, I'm never getting this again. It's not like I'll come back my next start and, you know, try to throw one.
And I think what makes this one worse, too, if this had happened in the eighth inning or seventh inning, and, you know, it still finished, like, he faced 28 batters.
Yeah.
We probably wouldn't remember it as much, but it was the fact that it was the last out.
Yeah.
Possible.
Right, that's right. It's the last out possible. I just looked it up. The last perfect game was Felix Hernandez in 2012.
Yeah.
We haven't had a perfect game in 10 years.
No, but
rare they are.
But we had three that year.
We had three in 2010. Yeah, that's right. There's only been 21 of them in the history of baseball. Sweet Lord, man. That's crazy. That's on our Throwback Thursday. Good, the Bad, and the Dumb coming up next. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Glad you could be with us.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb here on your Throwback Thursday. Hey, real quick, Ron. We were talking about whether Jim Joyce knew it was a perfect game. Well, he was on, he was at the Dallas Braden perfect game earlier that year.
Okay.
A month prior, when Dallas Braden threw a 4-0 perfect game over the Tampa Bay Rays, a month before, Joyce was the second base umpire of that game. So he has no excuse now.
Yeah.
So he was part of one.
Well, I mean, especially that game, he didn't do anything.
That's right. He didn't do nothing. What is the good of the day?
The good of the day. Well, you know what? I might do this quite often as we're leading up to the World Cup. I'm going to talk a little soccer.
All right.
So yesterday, the U.S. men's national team had a soccer tune-up match against Morocco.
They played in Cincinnati, right?
Played in Cincinnati, and they easily won that game 3-0. Now, I do have to bring up a kind of like a bad about that because soccer star, U.S. men's star, who was hopefully becomes a household name after this World Cup, Christian Pulisic, kind of got, I guess he's made some people mad.
Yeah, he commented on the U.S. fans.
He commented on the crowd that, you know, he kind of wishes that this was 100% pro-American. He felt it was like 50-50. And I don't know if...
Wait a minute. Now, you and I had a long discussion about them putting going to venues
right.
with a low Latin population.
Yeah, but this is
when
Morocco.
They play in Mexico. This is Morocco.
This is Africa. I don't think Cincinnati has a very big Moroccan...
A lot of people coming over from Casablanca.
Yeah. I don't know. Is Cincinnati the sister city of Casablanca?
Right. Is that what we're doing here?
What's the other major city there?
He thought it was 50-50?
I mean, around that. I might be putting words in his mouth, but he felt
even
it
if they
was
were playing
not
Mexico,
pro-American.
I get it, but come on. 50, yeah. With Morocco?
I think what it was they were dominating, so the crowd wasn't as fever-pitched as
that's what it
might
is.
Be. And he might just be confusing that.
Golly.
But, you know, but it was a very convincing win. I mean, and they looked good doing it, which is where they need to be right now. They have a tougher match coming up on Sunday against Uruguay.
Uruguay?
So, yeah.
Okay.
And that is also played somewhere in the United States, probably in Alaska.
Can't wait for the World Cup, man. Yeah, right? Exactly.
I do have another good, sticking with the soccer theme, which may be bad for the United States, is that Ukraine...
Yes, I saw this. They won.
They did win their match against Scotland and now are one win away from taking on the United States in the first game of the World Cup.
Oh, boy.
For those two teams. So,
oh, boy.
Yeah. The United States will either face, in their first group play game, will either face Ukraine or Wales. Wales does have a really good player in Gareth Bell, who's like a top 10 player. Yeah, maybe not anymore, but he was at one time. I think for me personally, I'd rather face Wales than Ukraine because I think there's a lot of, I don't know, Ukraine might be playing above their level right now, given situations around the world.
But they will play them eventually, right? You play everybody in your pool.
Well, if they qualify.
Well, yeah. If they're in the group.
If they won the World Cup.
You play everybody in your group, right?
You play everyone in your group, and it's actually the first game of their group.
Okay, so USA. They will eventually, if Ukraine is in it, they will eventually play Ukraine.
It'll be the very first game they play.
Okay, very good. All right, so if they are, it's cool. Yeah, it's
but, wild. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. They got to get, handled Scotland with these, so now we have to wait and see what they can do with Wales.
All right, what's the bad of the day?
It's not really bad for us, Tony.
All right.
Not for me and you. It's actually would be a good, maybe a great, maybe awesome. But Congress has decided to call Dan Snyder and Roger Goodell to testify.
Oh, boy.
And I can't wait. Basically, they're going to be testifying. I'm hoping some of these emails do come out, but the reason why they're testifying is because of the toxic workplace that Snyder may or may not have created.
Okay, good.
With Commanders.
It's not just a football thing.
No, it's not a football thing.
This is an important thing. And people, because sometimes when sports and Congress come together, the cliche is, don't they have other things to do?
Right.
Like, we don't need them to be talking to the NFL about
this is
a toxic work environment that should be looked into.
All the stories, all the rumors. And the fact is that these two have been avoiding this question like it's the plague.
Yeah,
and Congress
totally
was like, you guys have never really answered it. Why don't you come join us And we'll ask you these questions, and now you can testify.
That's right. You got to be. You got to tell the truth, or they get you on that so, big perjury in front of
curious.
Congress thing.
Although I would probably be, if I was a congressman in that, I'd probably go rogue with Roger Goodell.
Yeah, you might want to.
You know, Roger, this might be a little off topic, but Deflategate.
Yeah.
just started asking a bunch of random questions.
Just random questions about the league. Yeah, I might do that. I might do that.
So, but it has, and it also has, I think they might be touching on, you know, repurposing, reallocating, however you want to, you know, put the positive spin on it of funds that Dan Snyder might have been taking part of.
Yeah, they might start asking about that. They probably just want to get to the bottom of what's going on with the Commanders.
Yeah.
You know,
these guys probably have a little more skin in the game since it's right there in their backyard.
It's amazing.
They see it more often than anywhere else. So,
well, you know what? If Howard Hughes had to appear in front of Congress, I guess Dan Snyder isn't immune to these kind of things as well.
That's right.
Right? So, all right. What's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day, maybe you could share the light or show me the light on this one. But
all right.
I'm really putting on the Browns in these team bonding trips.
Yeah, exactly.
So we all know Deshaun Watson took the offense minus Baker Mayfield, let me preface that, to the Bahamas.
Yeah, they didn't take him.
Yeah, they didn't take Baker.
They didn't help him get, like, ready to take over the team when the suspension inevitably comes.
Yeah, but not to be outdone, Myles Garrett is taking his defense to South Beach.
All right, so this is going to be a new trend now? Is this what we're doing?
I mean,
one of the highest paid players on whatever side of the ball wants to do the meeting. He's got to take everybody on a trip.
That's what it looks like.
Goodness gracious.
So like if you're in Minnesota, I'm going to assume it's still Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins needs to take the offense someplace.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that they probably do these team bonding trips anyways. Like I'm sure in the offensive line, they'll all probably get together and go fishing, you know, some weekend someplace. But I don't know. Are we going to start hearing about it more when it gets more and more extravagant? Like, he's taking, you know, instead of them just hanging out and, you know, renting a cabin and going fishing and, you know, having a good time, you know, where training camp might be, he's taking the entire team to South Beach.
Yeah, yeah.
Where I'm certain no one will get in trouble.
Is anyone going to take the team to, like, Gettysburg like they did in Remember the Titans or that whatever that battlefield yeah. where they made them jog at, like, 4 a.m. and they're like, look around, gentlemen. Look around.
Listen.
Yeah, are they going to do that? Like, is Myles Garrett going to do that? Right? Making them run through the
trees.
In
a club. South Beach.
A South Beach club. Oh, God. Yeah.
Now, imagine us being in a club come February 17th or whatever. Yeah. I don't know when the Super Bowl is next year. You know, the day after. Imagine this feeling right here. We could have this.
It's you know what it is? It's like anything else that happens in these things. Everyone's going to want to outdo each other until you next thing you know, there's like they're all getting going to get on an Elon Musk rocket ship to space.
Yeah.
As a bonding thing. Like what more can you do? Like it's like the Super Bowl rings. Every team that wins a Super Bowl wants to have the most outlandish, gaudy, diamond filled.
Right. Can you wait for the Rams
possible?
One? I mean, when the Braves came out with their World Series ring that has a working light, an LED light when you lift up the lid. I mean, the Rams might as well just go full hologram.
Exactly. And it was like in the old days, a quarterback would be like, hey, my offensive line did a great job protecting me, or a running back that set a record would be like, I'm going to give them luggage.
A watch.
Then it became Rolex watches. Then it became cars. It's like, what are you going to buy them a house? What are you going to buy them like an amusement park? Like, what are you going to do? How can you reward your offensive tackle because you rushed for 2,000 yards or 1,800 yards and won the rushing title or whatever it is? Like, at what point do you go, I don't have any money to spend on what – I can't one-up the last guy that put this together.
Yeah, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to build a roller coaster in your honor.
Yeah.
I'm going to name it after you.
Good Lord, it's absolutely nuts. But yeah, that's what this is going to be now. It's like, well, he took him to the Bahamas. He's got to take him to some island, like some Richard Branson island that's got a private dock. Like at what point do you go, I can't do this anymore. Like,
well, you know, maybe we're glad. Maybe you should be glad that they're doing trips now instead of buying them stuff.
Right, sure.
Because if you buy them stuff, like, you know, your trajectory leads to, you know, I bought my offensive line their own private island.
Right.
Yeah, right. It's like, in the South Pacific.
Deshaun Watson's like, $233 million doesn't go as far as it used to. Like, I can't just be buying everything for everybody. You know? I may have to settle my case. Golly, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, so now we're, you know, now we're doing trips.
Now we're doing trips. Crazy.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of this trend.
I ain't either.
And like I said, I mean, you know, I can guarantee.
Don't you have a facility in the city you live in that you could just go, hey, we're get to come to the facility?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I'm take almost for positive these guys have all bonded doing things like, you know, near training camp or doing things, you know, renting a cabin. We've never heard about it.
You know what is weird? Like, and also, too, like, are they friends that they want to go on these trips together?
Right.
It's like they're business acquaintances. Like, they're probably teammates, but are they buddies enough where you were like, let's all go to the Bahamas together as some bro trip?
Like, would we do that?
Yeah, like, would you take
I mean, you and I might.
You and I might, yeah.
But would we say, you know, hey, you know, let's grab Greg Frank and Fred Fowler. They're doing a show after us. Let's grab Pepe. Anthony Pepe later on. Let's grab another show. All of us, let's go on a Sports Map Radio bonding trip to wherever.
We all do. And then Cole Thompson is back at the office going, nobody invited me. Is it because I'm on too early?
Yeah.
Like, does anybody, what happened to me? Why am I not on the trip? And we're like, oh, go back and get Cole. We got to drive the bus all the way back to pick him up. He's not packed, so we got to take him to the house. And we wait outside while he packs his suitcase. And then we leave without him, like, leave him at the front door. And then we say, oh, we're just kidding, and we drive all the way back to his house and pick him up.
Yeah.
And then we go, isn't this bonding? Isn't this what you think this is supposed to be? Right? Aren't we all together now? Is that what, I mean, come on. Is that what we're doing with these teams? Like, I don't, by the way, dude, outside of, like, I'm sorry. Is anybody else doing this? Because I kind of thought the Lakers did it with Kobe, but that was where training camp was when they went to Hawaii.
Right.
That wasn't a Kobe organized trip.
No, he might have organized a dinner.
Right. Oh, that's no doubt. No doubt.
And I'm certain that's what, you know, these things do. I mean, you know, the most extravagant thing I heard before this was when the Green Bay Packers, like a lot of the offensive linemen, appeared in Pitch Perfect 2.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like, is LeBron taking everybody to a pizza or something? I mean, what are we doing? Like, I don't hear other teams needing to do this.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Because the last time we know of a team bonding trip, we haven't seen the results from this yet, but the last time it backfired dramatically.
Yeah.
Now we did have, it wasn't a team bonding trip, but I do remember LeBron, what was it, LeBron, Carmelo, Chris Paul, they all took a trip together, right?
Yeah, they took a trip together.
Dwayne Wade.
But it wasn't LeBron bonding. Going, hey, before the season, I want everybody on the same page. We're all going to the Canary Islands. We'll work out together, talk to each other, get to know each other for the upcoming year.
Now, if there is tremendous success, we're going to see every team doing this.
Every team's going to be doing it.
So, let's hope the Browns stink this year.
Yeah, no kidding.
An end to this.
Put an end to this. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. All right, one more dumb when I come back on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Throwback Thursday, 2010. Robert on Twitter has sent the picture. He's our guy from Michigan, of Detroit area, so of course he chimes in. Good picture of the Armando Galarraga out that was not called an out. It was called safe.
Do we offer condolences to Robert? Because that's got to be painful.
I know.
Memory.
Robert is our guy. He really likes to comment on Michigan and Detroit sports, and that still has to be
it's gotta
really
sting.
Painful. Absolutely.
I mean, because they really haven't had much to think about in the last couple of years.
That's true. Hey, when you discover a new favorite bottle of Cabernet or Chardonnay at Total Wine & More, you'll discover a whole lot more. So explore the wondrous selection and totally low prices at TotalWine.com, where you'll find what you love and love what you find. Drink responsibly. B21. All right, I'm going to admit this without any sense of arrogance or above it all like some people do. I had absolutely no idea what that Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial was about.
Really?
I had no idea. I just knew it was going on. I didn't know it was a defamation lawsuit. I did not know why they were in court until yesterday.
Just thought it was the worst, but you knew it was the worst lawyering possible, right?
Well, yeah. Like every little bit of news that I did get on it, I was like, yikes, okay. But I didn't know he was suing her.
Yeah.
Like I did not know what this was. But I got to tell you, when I found out that she had to sit in the courtroom and he was in London on a band stage, I thought to myself, wait, now that's funny. Like, that's like she had to sit there in wherever it was, Virginia, I think, wherever it was,
yeah.
New York, Virginia.
No, I think it was Virginia because I dealt a lot with the Washington Post.
Okay. And he was rocking out to some band on stage in London at the time.
Right.
God bless you, Jack Sparrow. Way to go.
Well, hopefully he gets invited back now.
Yeah. I had zero idea why they were doing that. I didn't want to admit it because everyone, you know.
Yeah, it all stemmed from an op-ed piece that she co-authored.
She co-authored. She accused him of doing a bunch of things. You know what? No.
That's not true. And then we find out more about her, about how despicable she was.
Yeah.
Because of it.
Yay. But, yeah, I hate to admit it. No, I'm okay with admitting it. I did not know what it was
about. I think
it's
okay that you admit that.
Yeah, I did not know what it was about. I knew what was going on. I just didn't know why. All right, hour three is coming up. Brian Barrett will join us from WEEI in Boston and the Celtics. We'll get ready for game one of the finals. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It is a throwback Thursday as we continue on Sports Map Radio.